Psalm 146, 1 through 4. Praise ye the Lord, praise the Lord, O my soul. While I live, will I praise the Lord. I will sing praises unto my God while I have any being. Put not your trust in princes, nor in the son of man, in whom there is no help. His breath goeth forth, he returneth to his earth. In that very day his thoughts perish.
Good morning. Open your Bibles to Proverbs chapter 15. You'll start there in just a moment. So the last verse of that song said there are things in our heart, words that we can't always express or sing, and the first day of the week is what draws those, if not to our mind consciously. They raise the things such as the resurrection of Christ that establishes that hope and that joy that we have, that we need. Sometimes more, we realize more than others, but that we need every single day. And God knew that. God foresaw that in the way that he made us and in the needs that he created with us. And all of that is met and continues to be every first day of the week and in different ways on other occasions that God brings us together because of the common faith and hope and love that we share. Let's let that mind continue as we open his book. Panic is really a personal decision, and it's the state that someone reaches when they believe, whether it's reality or not, but they believe they have no other option, no other source of help. And this, I suppose, this past week we've all either seen that directly and personally, or by reports from a variety of sources. Especially because of the coronavirus, there are people literally in panic, and they express that in a variety of ways. If the news hasn't affected you and hasn't bothered you and hasn't really changed your week, it is affecting people around you, and that's the main reason that I wanted to look at this morning. When the world panics, what do Christians do? Not necessarily because I'm really concerned that anybody here is just really panicking and going off the deep end, but there are people around us that, if not there, are closer than they were a week before. And so really this morning I want to just really urge you to continue doing what I'm confident you are doing and bring the things maybe more to the forefront of our mind, that if we can show others at the least, then that's a part of our light. If we can go farther and talk to people about why we have no reason to panic as Christians, then God can use that opportunity as well. And so as Peter said, to just stir you up by way of reminder. When the world panics, Christians know that God sees all. Proverbs 15 and verse 3 says it like the Proverbs do, so concisely and powerfully. The eyes of the Lord are in every place, keeping watch on the evil and the good. With that in mind, think about it in light of recent the events of this past week. Think about for a minute all of the things that God has seen from the history of the world. And to stir that up, what is the worst thing that you have witnessed with your own eyes? What's the worst situation, tragedy? What's the worst thing you've ever seen? Maybe you heard about the tornadoes in the south a couple of weeks ago, and there was even a young family, a husband, wife, and a two-year-old son that were killed, that were Christians. So there are people there who have recently had that on their mind. Those of you in the military have seen things. So whatever the worst is that you have seen, and then sometimes we can imagine things are even worse than that, God has seen it all throughout all of human history. The things that that man has taken the time and trouble to record and the things that, he hasn't, both on a worldwide scale, and then the most horrible things that have happened to any individual that maybe nobody else has known about. God has seen all of that. God has also seen every, in physical terms, every success, every breakthrough that, as we perceive it, changed the course of human history. Well, God saw the before and the during and the after. None of that escaped His eyes. God has seen the rise and the fall of nations. Every single one, all the imperceptible events that contributed to the gradual, sometimes weakening of a nation, or the things that happened much more quickly and dramatically that led to a very quick fall. God's seen every single second of that process. On a smaller scale, God has seen the birth of every single individual. God sees the death of every individual. And every time someone dies, God sends His angels, and they guide the spirit, as Ecclesiastes 12 and verse 7 says, the spirit returns to God who gave it every single time. Turn over to Job 42. And so all of that is more than our minds can even comprehend. All the great things that have happened, all the terrible things that have happened on every scale, we can't even grasp it. But to whatever degree you can, and whatever your mind drifts to as you think about the highs and the lows of human history, and then your perspective and God's perspective, what is the answer? Well, what did all of that accomplish? Everything that God has seen, from the great to the terrible, from the individual to the worldwide, what did it accomplish? In one sense, we really stand in the same place as Job as he went through his own. He says, I know that you can do everything, and that no purpose of yours can be withheld from you. So that's what Job knew. God, nothing is out of your ability. Nothing's going to interrupt and stop and bring your plans to a screeching halt. And yet, did he have an answer to what God's purposes were? Were there purposes for what God permitted to happen to Job? We get to look back. We know, yes. Were God's purposes withheld? No. But Job didn't have any clue that thousands of years later, up in this part of the world that he maybe had no idea about, people would be saying his name and reading about his life. And that's the place that we are in. We can know God accomplishes His purposes. We cannot know all of what His purposes are. And that's for our good. As parents know, there are things you tell your children, there are things that you don't tell your children, there are things they don't need to know. And that's a part of Philippians chapter 4, verses 6 and 7. Be anxious for nothing. With prayer, supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And in verse 7, that, you know, it took a while as a child having sung that song, I have the peace that passes understanding. I thought of a football when I heard the word passes. I didn't know what that meant. But a few years later, then I figured that out. The peace that surpasses. There's a peace that comes when we have the answers. We like to have the answers, and we feel better when we have the answers. But what Job finally learned, and what we're in the process of learning, and what we hope people in our society will learn, is that there's a peace that is even better than understanding and having all the answers and knowing God's purposes. The peace is we serve the God of peace. And so what is He accomplishing? I don't know. And I don't have to know. I don't have to let my mind constantly grind and work to try to figure it all out. I don't have to, because God sees it all. And yet, not everybody has that kind of assurance. The verse that I had on the screen, if you didn't read it, is from Psalm 4. And the first part of verse 6, I'm confident, is in the mind of a lot of people, whether they express it in these words or not. There are many who say, who will show us any good? Who will show us any good? Could that not be in the background of some of the videos that maybe you've seen this past week? There are people who live without who live with that question and who live without the foundation of this confidence. God sees it all. And the fact is, if there is no God, then life is no more valuable or less valuable than death. They just are. They're not better or worse. One isn't better than the other. So if there is no God, why worry about trying to have a vaccine or a solution to a problem? What does it matter if it wipes everybody off the face of the earth? The earth, the universe will just continue, and that'll be the next step in the so-called evolution of whatever. So why would anybody care if there is no God? Or for those who are in religions that serve many gods, well, in that case, like in the case of Athens, you know, they had all their idols, and then they had, oh, well, just in case that doesn't cover it, we have the altar to the unknown God. So if there is panic for whatever reason, and I worship many different gods, well, the reason there's many different gods is because they all have their different areas of expertise and their different powers. And just about every polytheistic religion I've read of, those gods kind of spar and, with each other. So they're in competition. They themselves are limited. So what kind of confidence do you have? Are the gods even paying attention to us and to our virus if they're limited? So maybe they can't even help. And maybe they're too busy, like Elijah said, of the gods of Baal. Maybe they're asleep or they're out tending to other business. There's no assurance in that. With that in mind, Colossians chapter 4, verses 5 and 6. Colossians 4, verses 5 and 6, to us says, especially as we consider those who don't have this assurance that God sees all, for us, we would say, walk in wisdom toward those who are outside, redeeming the time. Let your speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer each one. Because we have this foundation, we can probably joke, joked with Ryan, oh, did you walk through our body temperature scanner as you came in? There have been some serious things that have happened. But one reason we can joke to some degree about something that is very serious, or to some people even more serious, is because we have this foundation. Let your speech be seasoned with salt. It might do us well, though, to consider not everybody has this foundation. And there are people, in their mind at least, without the knowledge and the fear of God, then even the threat of some problem can be significantly unsettling and may call to their mind some other similar occasion. And so we need to consider that as we deal with those who are outside, with those who don't have the calm and the assurance that we do. Be sensitive and be aware of that, but then also redeem the time. Use those opportunities to preach the word, to patiently show and tell what we can with all long-suffering, with all patience, with all doctrine, with all teaching. And maybe this is the first doctrine that we would introduce them to or remind them of to lay the foundation for further. Whatever is happening, wherever it's happening, here or there, near or far, we know, the Christian doesn't panic, because we know God sees it all. And no purpose of his is withheld. Secondly, when the world panics, they lose their mind. They often forget and disregard whatever rules they lived by under normal circumstances. If that was social norms, well, that often gets thrown out the window, and then they have no guide. And so that's happened all kinds of places, riots and all kinds of events. But when the world panics and loses all sense of boundary and guidance, the Christian doesn't panic, because we have the same counsel to guide us and to help us through whatever the source of uncertainty is. For us, that doesn't change. We have the gospel of Jesus Christ. Go into all the world, preach the gospel to every creature, every person, every circumstance, every culture. The message that Jesus was sending the apostles out with, it of course was primarily concerned with man and sin. That's the greatest problem. But then it also helps with every other problem to some degree. It doesn't solve every other problem, but helps with every problem. And so the gospel of Christ is the power of God unto salvation to everyone that believes, to the Jew first, and also to the Greek. It applies everywhere. And so whether it's the problem is great or small, or life is great or it isn't, the gospel is going to apply. If you want to turn back to Matthew 5, I'm not going to read anything, but just refer, and so you might want to glance over the sections to refresh your memory, but what we call the Sermon on the Mount. Think about how even just that one occasion, or maybe he taught that more than one place, but the lessons that Jesus taught there, think about how they apply, again, universally and in every season and phase and whatever could come up in life. Jesus talked about being pure in heart. He talked about being meek. He talked about anger, lust, adultery, loving your enemies. And then at the end of chapter 6, don't worry about how much or this or that. Sufficient is each day, the trouble for each day. So Jesus was teaching faith should be stronger than your fear, and that covers every single circumstance. What Jesus talked about applied to the heart, to the inward things of man, and the inward decisions we make, and the outward decisions that we make. All of that is covered. What Jesus taught in the gospel is unchanging. When he sent the apostles out, in Matthew 28, all authority has been given to me, so go teach all nations, and lo, I'm with you always. For how long? Even to the end of the age. Well, the apostles weren't going to live to the end of the age. So what Jesus was teaching them and sending them out with, it was going to outlast them. And he would be with everyone who obeyed that gospel and continued to learn all things that he was commanding. So this gospel is timeless. Any circumstance, regardless of the circumstance, it doesn't affect, it doesn't change what is said. And so that makes this a very practical message. And again, I'll go back to Matthew 5 through 7. What Jesus taught, as we've recorded or as we've organized that in these three chapters, he talked about what he said affects how we think and what we say, what we do in every decision. He talked about our conduct with friends when there's conflict. He talked about our conduct toward our spouse, toward our enemies, our approach and our mindset with money. He summed it all up by saying, look, there's two ways. There's a narrow way and there's a broad way, and there are false teachers. And then, as Matthew records, it ends with the wise man and the foolish man, where Jesus is dealing with eternity. So you just take that summary of the topics that Jesus touched on, and that is as daily and as practical as it can get, whether the circumstance is disease or disaster, or whether the circumstance is health and prosperity. Everything that Jesus said applies to both of those, whether it's on a national level or on a personal level that nobody else knows about. There is nothing or something that Jesus says just on that occasion, aside from the rest of his life and the rest of the New Testament. Just on that one occasion, the things that he says touches all of these circumstances in all of the world, in every creature. So if I have a guide like that, I'm never at the end of my rope. There's always the help that I need available. But again, we live in a world that panics because not everybody has this assurance. It's available, of course, but they're not using it. They're either not aware of this help, or they've decided they don't want it. And so what do they rely on? Well, we have cultural expectations. That's what people, they rely on, that conduct is determined by the culture they live in. And so, well, I mean, you expect to work so many hours for so much pay. And you expect for traffic to go this way or that way. They're just things that are normal, but that's just the way that our culture does it. And so some things change that. If there's some circumstance that requires martial law, well, now all of what was normal, that gets thrown out the door. And what do we do? Well, we just do whatever we're told. That's the position that people find themselves in from circumstance to circumstance. Well, what was normal, what was expected, well, now that's out the window, so what do I do? And they've either got to figure it out on their own or find someone that they hope they can trust. And, yeah, if I get to that point, I might be in a panic. But a Christian is never at that point. Here's a rather plain example of that. This is a group of Hindu. They're of some particular party. I forget if it's political. It has obvious both cultural and religious aspects to it. But see, they all have cups in their hand. They're drinking cow urine because of its medicinal effects. And this picture back here is a depiction of, looks like one of their gods, and it's called Corona. They believe that drinking cow urine is going to help them against the coronavirus and other health benefits. I'm not saying that to mock them, I guess any more than Elijah did. It exposes the foolishness of it, but why cow in particular? Why would they choose the urine of a cow? Because in the Hindu religion, the cow is a sacred animal. So there's going to be some kind of medicinal benefits to the urine of a cow. And again, that doesn't make me right about anything. That isn't my point. But it shows not everybody has this assurance that I have a guide that helps me to work through and reason through. And here's to the best I know, here's how God's going to help me. And maybe he'll help me in other ways. If I don't have that, then I'm exposed to believing a lie. And there isn't any one of us in here that couldn't be deceived to in that way or something like it. If you throw this out and you live for a few years and you struggle and you can latch on to just about anything and drink the Kool-Aid or whatever example that you want to think about that has happened. Or my life just goes on hold and I'm paralyzed until some professional, some medical savior comes and saves my life again. And that's where many people, most Americans are not going to do that. But many people, they're panicked, they're frozen, they're paralyzed, and they're waiting for someone to be the savior. And outside of that, they have no other guide, no other source of help that they have confidence in. And again, without God, where do you go? And without God, there are no universal standards or councils or priorities. So even think of this. While as a nation, as a world, everybody is concentrating on finding a vaccine, finding a solution. And everybody assumes that's the right course. But if there is no God, why not just try to spread the virus? Spreading the virus, slowing the virus, stopping the virus. These are all just personal opinions. And if someone chooses to do one or the other, nobody can say one idea is better or worse than the other. It's just whatever someone's personal opinion is. That's so obvious to us because we know God sees it and God has provided a guide for us. And we need to use that and think about that, whether in the days of our youth or the days that come thereafter. As we choose who we will serve, as Joshua said, choose you this day who you will serve. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Who I choose to serve and not serve is going to affect what I believe, and what I believe is going to affect what I do. And so if I look at this and kind of laugh and kind of chuckle, then I better choose who I'm going to serve. Because if I don't serve God, I may end up there, or I may end up somewhere else that is equally foolish, and read the book of Proverbs for examples. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. We're not so intelligent, that's why we can see through this. we can see through this because of the fear of the Lord. And so Christians don't panic. When the world panics, Christians keep an interest in others. And that's often one of the social norms that goes out the window, doesn't it? In panic, people forget about other people. Survival becomes the ultimate goal. And there's plenty of other people competing for that survival and the items that we think will preserve our survival. So if you're in the way of my survival, then you get my elbow, so I get the last case of bottled water or toilet paper or whatever it may be. That's not an extreme example, is it? So people have, everyone for themselves. When people panic, that's where the mind goes. I've just got to do whatever can get me or maybe a couple other people that I care the most about. But everybody else, hey, sorry, you're on your own. And then there are people who have, on their own, they know, maybe some physical or other limitation and problem. And there are people who know, I have no one to rely on. I have no one to trust. There's no one I can even seek help from. And maybe here in Fairbanks, Alaska, as remote as we are, maybe even to a greater degree here in some ways than in other places. Or some people might dismiss any personal responsibility or interest in others because, well, that's the government's job. The government's going to take care of things, so if they do their job, then all I have to do is take care of me. And again, without God, then that's a fairly rational plan. But that plan eventually leads you to a dead end. Maybe if you're young and healthy, you feel spry and you'll be okay. But you're 80, you're 90, you're 100 years old, and you're alone, then you push the panic button. But as Christians, we don't. God keeps our interest, again, in all situations. God keeps us with a constant interest in other people. First of all, because of what we studied down in the 7 to 10-year-old class. It begins in the beginning. God shapes our view of others because God said, let us make man in our image. And in the likeness of God, he made them male and female. All men are created in the image of God. So there's all kinds of life forms. You've got animals, plants, and you've got people. But then God puts this priority. No, people come ahead of plants and animals. God has set that because we're made in God's image. And every single person I see every single day is made in the image of God just as I am. James 3, verse 9 says the same thing. Romans 13, and verse 9, love your neighbor as yourself. Galatians 6:10, as we therefore have opportunity, let us do good to all men. And I'll finish that verse in a few minutes, but let us do good to all men. Matthew 7, verse 12, whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them. If you were blessed to have parents who were Christians, if you were blessed to have parents who maybe weren't Christians but who opened the Bible in your home or maybe had some cross-stitched nice little saying, there's a good possibility it might include some of these. Talk about fundamental, first principle. What this does, though, is keep our interest, keep our attention on other people. And then in Acts chapter 4, verses 34 and 35, as the gospel was spread, as Christians were working together as churches, Acts 4, 34 and 35, nor was there anyone among them who lacked, for all who were possessors of lands or houses sold them and brought the proceeds of the things that were sold and laid them at the apostles' feet, and they distributed to each one as anyone had need. And that anyone, notice back at the beginning of verse 34, was anyone among them. And so God shapes our view of others. Do good unto all men. But then Paul writes, and especially to those who are of the household of faith. And so we find that as the gospel was spread, the churches were given the instructions to care for the physical needs, emphasis on needs. The church used its funds to meet the needs, not the wants. There's no games. There's no whatever their equivalent of coffee and donuts was. The church wasn't doing that. Needs, not wants. And then in regards to the churches, also it mentions here, they were providing the physical needs of the saints. You'll find no example. You'll find no teaching, no instruction specifically for the local church of the churches providing for the physical needs of those who are unbelievers. Does that mean God doesn't care about them? No, God has a plan. The church helps the physical needs of the saints. And then the saints are given this more general instruction. As we have opportunity, do good to all men. God covers all the bases if we'll just follow his plan. So what all of this does, it keeps our eyes open to everyone around us. It keeps our interest in others, even in the times of greatest panic. And so when there's panic because of some disease, then just go back in your mind and think about how these simple statements apply. Whatever could happen because there's widespread panic because of disease or the potential of a disease, then I look at those who may be threatened or unnerved by it as people who are made in God's image, who are my neighbor, whom I love, for whom I'm trying to do good, and the good that I would do is what I would hope they would do for me. And that applies if there were some natural disaster, if there were some tragedy, then whoever is potentially affected is made in the image of God, is my neighbor whom I love, for whom I'm looking for an opportunity to do good, and the good that would be, well, just kind of common sense, what I would want done for me, and especially to those of the household of faith. If there were some widespread economic crash or some individual, more individually situational economic crash, then it goes back through the same. Again, maybe only those who have been in the military have a reality grasp of this. People in our society think they do because they play video games. I know I'm among those who don't understand what the circumstances, where the mind goes. When you're surrounded by other people competing for your land and your resources, we're blessed geographically where we are as a nation, that we don't live in that kind of a threat, but many people do and who live in a war. But if we were there, or if we will be there one day, or if your children will be there one day, or if your grandchildren will be there one day, what will you do? What do you want them to do? Disregard the needs of others, or look at even the enemy, view even the enemy as made in the image of God, a neighbor to love, to do good for, as I would hope would be done for me. You know all this, but this is the wisdom of God. When the world panics, and every man for himself, Not among us. And then among the blessing of being a Christian is that you have other people viewing you this way. You don't have to be overly focused on yourself. Love your neighbor as yourself. So yes, you are attentive to yourself. But if the worst thing that could possibly happen happened here in Fairbanks, then you have people who view you in the image of God as a neighbor, someone for whom to do good, especially because you're a member of the household of faith. And there are people who don't have 20 other people, 15 other people who they know view them that way. As a Christian here, you do. And that's why we don't panic. Last, when the world panics, Christians not only do not panic, we are content. That's another level, isn't it? Panic all around, and we're content. We're not apathetic. We're not disinterested. We're not twiddling our thumbs. We're content. As Christians, we are content with what we can know. Whatever is going on, there's some things we can know. There's some things we can do. There's some things we can change. And I'm content to pay attention to what I can know, what I can do, what I can change. Now, how am I going to know? How will I know what to do? How will I know what to change? Goes back, Proverbs 1, the fear of the Lord. The beginning of knowledge. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Does that mean the answer automatically pops into your head? No. But it gives you a direction. It gives you a starting place. It weeds out the things you don't have to pay attention to. The answers you cannot have. And I'm getting ahead of myself there. But what is right? What is wise? What can I know? What can I do? What can I change? God lets us at least focus in upon that. And so when others panic, if I have the fear of the Lord, then I'm not seeking a loophole from the law of Christ so that I can steal to justify, I can lie in order to justify. See, that throws me into panic mode. No, those aren't even options. I don't waste my time thinking about or considering, well, might I do that? No. With the fear of the Lord, I know what to do, and I know what not to do. With the fear of the Lord, I welcome, in fact, the wisdom of God. Turn to Proverbs. Proverbs 14. I can be content with the wisdom of God. You know, in the Old Testament, sometimes there were quarantines because of health problems. Leprosy, right? God, those lepers were not allowed to go to the temple and participate in the Passover. There were some circumstances that required quarantine. But not all illnesses were that way. So there's the wisdom of God there. And while that's not our law today, and He hasn't given us the set of illnesses to quarantine or when we shouldn't assemble, but we have some way to work through that. Proverbs chapter 14 and verse 15. The wisdom of God also reminds us, the simple believes every word, but the prudent considers well his steps. Proverbs 25, verse 19. Proverbs 25:19. Confidence in an unfaithful man in time of trouble is like a bad tooth and a foot out of joint. What can I do? What can I know? What can I change? Well, get reliable information. Get information from reliable, trustworthy sources. So before we get on the internet, before we turn on the television, ahead of time, before I take this information and act on it, is it from a reliable, trustworthy source? And there's some judgment in that. What can I do? What can I know? Turn to Philippians chapter 2. Here's one. What can I control? What can I change? Some people have said that part of the toilet paper panic has been that it's something I can do. At least I'm doing something. Here's something better than stripping the toilet paper off the shelves. Philippians 2, 14 and 15. Do all things without grumbling or complaining and disputing. Whatever the problems are, I can change my attitude about the problem. The problem may not change. I can change my attitude and take complaining off the table and disputing, needless disputes off the table, that you may become blameless and harmless children of God, without fault in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation among whom you shine as lights in the world. By the way, Paul was writing this from a prison because of empty accusations that were made against him, requiring him to leave Jerusalem, go to Caesarea, from Caesarea to get on a ship where he was shipwrecked en route eventually to Rome. Kind of an inconvenient period of Paul's life that God used, but that Paul wouldn't have written or wouldn't have preferred. So that keep that background in mind when you read what Paul says. As a reminder, I can change my attitude towards the problems and frustrations that come when other people panic. To the extent that I can be content with what I know and what I can do. And the other side of that is, as Christians, we're also content with what we cannot know, with what we cannot do, with what we cannot change. There are human limitations by God's design. Why don't we immediately have a resolution to this virus? Because God put certain limitations on us. Some problems can't be identified at all. Some can't be identified quickly. Some problems can be identified, but no solution can be found, or it can't be found quickly. That's the way God created this world. I can't change that and how other people act or overreact or underreact, whatever it may be. I can be content with all that. That's the way it is. Doesn't mean I do nothing. Doesn't mean, again, I'm hopeless because everything's spiraling out of control. It just means some things I can and some things I can't. And what gives me that mindset, that strength? Fear of the Lord, the beginning of knowledge, the fear of the Lord, the beginning of wisdom, so that when others panic, what we read from Psalm 146 is, do not put your trust in princes. Does that have any meaning right now? Do not put your trust in the rulers. He's not saying disregard them. It's probably David. If it's David who wrote that, he was a prince. He was a ruler. But the point is, we'll put our trust in the Lord. The Lord appointed rulers, and they have a responsibility. And if they'll fulfill their responsibility, that will bless us. If they don't, life might be harder. But either way, don't put your trust in princes. Praise the Lord. Put your trust in the Lord. And then that gives a context for princes. Look at 2 Chronicles 16. I thought this was interesting, and it really very similar to Psalm 146. Second Chronicles 16 is the end of the life of Asa, King Asa. In verse 12, it says, in the 39th year of his reign, Asa became diseased in his feet, and his malady was severe. Yet in his disease he did not seek the Lord, but the physicians. So if he had just trusted God, he wouldn't have needed to talk to the doctors. It's not what it says. He could seek the physicians, but first he needs to seek the Lord. Seeking the physicians without the Lord is like eating your food and you don't acknowledge the Lord. And so then you're dependent on the grocery store, probably, and somebody getting it here down the Parks Highway, probably, or if you grow it on your own, then you're several steps, miles ahead of me, in fact. But then you are dependent upon them, and you totally disregard who they are dependent on, the ultimate source for all of that. So along the lines of Psalm 146, don't put your trust in physicians. Doesn't mean disregard them and don't consider, and if they're trustworthy, follow their recommendations, do that. But that's not the foundation. They are not, are they? And so this gives even more meaning to, or some background to, Jesus' statement. Do not worry about tomorrow. Sufficient for the day is the trouble thereof. Do not be anxious for nothing. But with prayer, let your requests be made known with thanksgiving. And the God of peace will guard your heart. Consider the present and consider the future with faith and with trust that is stronger than fear and worry. Fear and worry are not sinful. Jesus was distressed in the Garden of Gethsemane to the point that it even seems to have physically affected him. But that wasn't stronger than his trust in following the plan of God. And so Christians, don't panic, because we are content with what we know and do and cannot know and do. So I'm not going to end this with a series of medical statements about the coronavirus or any others, You decide for yourself your own approach to the coronavirus, as long as it includes knowing that God sees it all. Knowing that you have a guide for your conduct. Choose your own approach as long as it includes an interest in others, and as long as you are content with what you know and don't know. And if you'll do that, then as others panic, then walking in fellowship with God, you won't. Turn to number 319. One thing that can be accomplished by occasions such as this is that as terrible a threat or a reality that some virus may be, it's not as terrible as sin. And so we sing this song to urge you to think about the infection, the pandemic called sin. And if you recognize it is in you, if you seek the forgiveness that God makes available, we're here and happy to stir you up. If as a Christian you need to return to Him, confess your sins to Him. And if our prayers will help and encourage and strengthen you, the blood of Christ will cleanse you. If you're not a Christian, think about sin as your greatest problem. Whatever is going to happen this week or next week's because of the virus, compare it to the problem of sin. And today, by faith, confess Him and be baptized into Christ. And let this settle and strengthen our faith. Think on these things. And if we can help you, let us know how as we stand together singing.